like Dave, I need to ask some questions about your background so that I know how much I need to explain. How many urban planners are here? Oh, a lot fewer than programmers. How about, how many people have been to Detroit? Okay, good. How many people have set foot in a neighborhood where regular people live, as opposed to downtown? Great. How many people have lived in Detroit? How many people want to live in Detroit? Great, okay. So urban planning is a field that deals with trying to strengthen or improve places. So we work on a very wide range of topics like transportation, housing, economic development, environmental issues, commercial development like retail development, and parks and recreation. I've probably left out some topics, but anyway, it's all oriented towards making places better. But in fact, what urban planners end up working on every day is guiding development, managing development, incentivizing development, managing growth, trying to affect or influence the impact of growth on places. But what do planners do when there is no growth and no development, or virtually none, or only in certain small areas? And that's the situation facing cities like Detroit, not the only such city, Cleveland, Buffalo, St. Louis, and I could list a lot more, also face this situation. So I've actually been told by planners that's not where planners work, and yet I believe strongly that planners need to be improving the quality of life in all parts of cities and neighborhoods. So then how? So first what I'm going to do is give you a quick summary of what's happened in Detroit, what the experience of the city over the last 50, 60 years. Then going to give you a quick mention of what kind of planning's been going on downtown. And then talk much more about planning in a very disinvested place. This photo shows Brightmoor. And then about planning in a neighborhood that was very strong until the mortgage foreclosures hit in the early 2000s. So that kind of neighborhood. So what's happened in Detroit? It's lost about 63% of its peak population since 1950. It was three-fifths of the metro area, the three-county metro area, and now is about 18% of that three-county metro area in 2010. It lost almost 95% of its manufacturing jobs that were there after World War II, and around 90% of its retail jobs. At the same time, it had originally about 60% of the manufacturing jobs in the county, in the three-county metro area, similar to its population share. But with the most recent data we have, that's down to about 10%, so way below what one would expect just based on population share. And in retail, back when people went downtown to shop, it had 75% of the three-county area's retail jobs. That's now down to about 6%. So really, to shop for most things, Detroiters need to leave the city. The same time, the poverty rate rose greatly. In 1969, it was about 15%. The first year we have data for poverty. And in 2012, the most recent numbers are 41% of people in poverty. In the three-county metro area, poverty also rose from about 8% to about 18% in 2012. That's now probably lower because 2012 was a recession year. and now we're into recovery. So the number of occupied houses has decreased by about 37%, but that's lagging behind loss of households, and therefore we can expect a lot more loss of housing. Housing is has very low value, and we're seeing more disinvestment. And the people experiencing this are about 87% non-white, about 82% African-American. So when you lose huge numbers of jobs and lose a lot of population, you end up with loss of structures, very little demand for property and buildings. And so what this map shows is from 2009, the blue areas around the edges of the city are pretty intact still. They haven't had much of the abandonment you see pictures of. Or they hadn't as of 2009. The dark blue is most intact, lighter blue, somewhat less intact. And the red areas, and the yellow areas, and the orange areas have experienced much more loss. So the loss is very uneven across the city. Unfortunately for kind of public relations, I-94 and I-96 go right through areas where what you see from the highway are abandoned structures. So after 2007, huge numbers of mortgage foreclosures hit the city. One third of housing that could have mortgages went through mortgage foreclosure. And that then meant that housing values fell enormously. So this curve shows average residential sales value for a pretty strong neighborhood, one of those blue ones in the prior map, and the city as a whole. And you can see, looking especially at the arm's length sales, which are the ones that indicate market value best, there was a huge, huge drop for the people in this neighborhood from above, say, 145,000 down to something above 20,000. Can you imagine that? We didn't experience anything like that here. Most parts of the United States did not experience this. And this citywide drop is from around 95,000 to something like 10,000. So just you can imagine this left many people shocked and underwater with what mortgages they had left. And many people lost their homes and left. So what can planning do in a situation like that, where there really is no way to rebuild, redevelop? There's just not enough demand. So what is it that planning can then do, given that planning mostly focuses on redevelopment and rebuilding and revitalizing? So this is quickly what is happening in downtown and midtown. If you pay attention to any of the news from Detroit, you've heard something about this. So on the far right is a map from Arock Ventures, Dan Gilbert, redevelopment plan for the lower, here's the river, this is Woodward, and so there's the Tiger Stadium, Comerica Park, and so these are the zones he sees as being redeveloped, and he has put billions of dollars into buying buildings in the city, renovating them, getting them occupied. And that has made downtown much more lively than it used to be. And then there's the Olympia development proposal that's underway now in development for a new arena, a new hockey arena.
Hey.
That is up in this area above. And then the part that's they're working on, Olympia Development's working on, is the arena itself. Here are proposed developments that other people might do as they take advantage of the Arena District. We'll see if that happens. And then this is a plan for Tech Town. Here's Wayne State University. This is just north of the freeway from Wayne. And it's a plan by Midtown Development, Inc., which is working on, a nonprofit, which is working on development around the anchor institutions up Woodward. So Henry Ford Hospital, the Arts District, the other medical centers, and so forth. And they are heavily subsidized, receiving huge sums of money through foundations to make that development happen. The foundations in general have decided that is the spine to work on to redevelop. So they are doing kind of what planners usually do, redevelopment. How do you think about rebuilding redevelopment? But what about the rest of the city? That's about 7.2 square miles that I was looking, showing you before. The rest of the city, the whole city is 139 square miles. So what's happening elsewhere? So there's been a very innovative plan, Detroit Future City Strategic Framework, that actually says the city's lost a lot of population. It's never going to be back to 1.85 million. Let's accept that, and let's figure out how to do things differently. In fact, the city may continue to lose population for a while more. So therefore, let's think about what the city can become differently than in the past. This is really only the third plan in the nation to take that kind of perspective. The other ones are from Youngstown and Flint. So also cities like Detroit that have lost much of their peak population and jobs. So here's existing land use. Yellow is residential. And this is the planned or proposed 50-year land use scenario. Huge change. So the yellow is still residential. This lighter green is a kind of sparse residential, so with lots of vacant land. And then these blues and kind of dark blues are ecological landscapes and industrial landscapes. That means with businesses that can make money from doing something on vacant land, like forestry or agriculture or solar panels or whatever. So this is a kind of a 30,000 foot view. It really, if you go down to a block in this area, it would not be what that block will be, but it is in general a guide. So if a developer comes along and says, I want to do a lot of low-income housing in this area, because there's a lot of vacant land there and I can, they will not, we think, get funding because it doesn't conform with the plan. So we'll see how much that holds. So I wanted to dig down lower than 30,000 feet, in fact, even street level, to show you what goes on in an area of the city that's quite vacant. Just to look at that previous map, I'm going to talk first about Brightmoor, which is right in here, and then about Morningside, which is right in here. So Brightmoor is one of the most vacant areas in the city. And it on this map, grayish, if you can see, are vacant lots. What's happened in this area is that many people have taken over the adjacent lots and made something else of them. So they have put in driveways. They've put in fences, and they have play equipment for their kids. They have little swimming pools. They have patios. And this area was built densely, so it's become more spacious. And in addition, others have actually taken over multiple lots. We call them blots, which is between a block and a lot. But they can own, can have taken over, they don't own them actually, they're squatting, say four or five lots and remaking them. I'll show you what some look like. So this is one house that must have once had, had another house right here and another house on the other side quite close. And so they have put up a 6-foot fence. They have done remarkable landscaping. Anyone who's a gardener knows how much work that took, and the fence too. And then if you walk down that sidewalk, along the sidewalk, here's what you see next. They've put in a driveway. There's more plantings. There's then a fence that they put in. And on the other side of this fence, there's a garden with a corn patch. And then over here, I didn't get a picture of that. There are apple trees and a grape arbor. And they have just remade the place to something where they have a good, better quality of life.
And everyone else.
But there's not too many other people there. But what they said was, we're doing this because we live here, and because on the other, look at that place on the other side of the street. We do not want our property look be dumped on and overgrown and very ugly. So they did it to improve their quality of life, but clearly security was also an issue given the 6-foot fence. And that's kind of what, here's another one that where you can clearly see security and improving their own environment are big issues. Now, lest you think all of this is blots, here's what much of the landscape actually looks like. So a structure fallen down, another structure that's been scrapped, but someone's trying to live there. And then down here, a landscape that actually, this was taken early in the summer, so it's not, it would be much more overgrown normally. So, to look at something nicer than that, here's another blot. And so what does urban planning do in this kind of place? And I say that first of all, you try to build on what people have shown they want by what they have been putting huge energy into, enable those ones who are squatting to get ownership or at least long-term leases of their property. There's a problem in that 60% of the lots that have been taken over as side lots or blots are not owned by the people who occupy the house. And of those, 43% are owned by individuals. So they could emerge from however many decades they've been gone and say, oh, somebody wants my lot. I think I could make a lot of money here. And that would very much undermine what's going on. So planners need to make sure there's some kind of land security. And one of my students who works for the Detroit, former students, who works for the Detroit Land Bank said he has made it good with that first plot I showed you. They now own that land. So there's progress. There's much more to say, but I don't have time. So go on to the neighborhood that has much more strength, much more market strength. And this is Morningside, as I said. The blue color, this is a map that shows housing condition. And the blue color is good condition. So you can see the dominant color is good. And then there's a few reds, which mean those need to be demolished, but not that many. And then over here, there's a lot of vacant land. The disinvestment has happened here, but is now moving this way. This neighborhood lost over a third of its population. A third of the people who lived there no longer live there because they lost their homes to mortgage foreclosures. New people moved in. They tended to be, the properties tended to be purchased by investors, so that the property, the neighborhood has changed from predominantly owner-occupied to more renter-occupied. It is definitely a neighborhood in danger of going over the tipping point where there's no way to bring it back to being a place that people choose to live. One of the people who lives here says, nobody wants to live here now, or nobody would choose to move in here. The people who live there often do want to live there. But how do you then, so the challenge is, how do you deal with that kind of profound change brought on by mortgage foreclosures? So this shows a picture of how many mortgage foreclosures there were. You can see it really was a crisis in 2007. And now people say, well, nobody has a mortgage anymore, so there aren't any. This is what's happened to housing values. A picture for a shorter time period than the one I showed before, but you can see people have lost huge amounts of their housing value. So this has really undermined confidence in the future of the neighborhood so that people are less likely to make investments in their homes because they may be getting ready to leave. So how to change that? Well, for one thing, looking at here you see the assessor's view of market value. So what the Detroit assessor did was did not revalue property quickly, and so it was far overassessed, and it gets worse. People in poverty, according to state law, do not need to pay property taxes, but if no one tells people, then they don't realize that. So many people are losing their houses to property tax foreclosure for bills they should never have been charged. There are many other kinds of tax breaks that no one has known about, and so people have way overpaid, which adds to the problems. So then what should urban planning do? Really work on systems like the property tax system to get it much more reinforcing people's living there rather than hurting them or driving them out. And there's much, much more to say, but my students do plans in these neighborhoods, and they are often kind of thick. So you can look at them. I'm not going to explain too much. But it's really all a matter of trying to do things that will make people regain confidence that there's a future in this neighborhood, and they want to plan to stay. So bottom line is that instead of talking about redeveloping, rebuilding, revitalizing, we're really talking about reinventing, reimagining, not rebuilding in any of these neighborhoods because there's really not sufficient demand. And that is a huge departure from business as usual for urban planners. Thanks.